Welcome to Talking Stock. I'm your host, Doug Harvey, Director of the Institute for Faculty Development at Stockton University. Talking Stock is a space where colleagues can discuss teaching, scholarship, and service. This week, we'll be returning to the topic of diversity in higher education, and specifically talking about the recruitment and retention of faculty of color. And here's today's guest.
My name is Allison Sinanen, and I'm Associate Professor of Social Work, and I'm also the coordinator of the BSW program.
Oh, great. Thanks for joining us. So we're talking about the topic of diversity in higher education. So I wanted to ask you, what do you see as the factors that are influencing the underrepresentation of both students and faculty of color in higher ed?
So I think when we have diversity and a diverse faculty body, staff, and students, it really helps with the richness of the education process for the student as well as for the faculty. It influences the strength, productivity, intellectual personality mm-hmm. of what the university can offer to the students. I think many times students live in a microcosm, or as faculty does as well, and they truly, you know, you hear the word diversity and we kind of have our own definition of it. Mm-hmm. And so teaching at a PWI, a predominantly white institute, as a female of color, it was a little culture shock to me coming from New York. And I hear New York, New Jersey, no big difference. But many of the students were not as receptive to talk about diversity or having and it's really interesting. The social work program, we have a lot of non-traditional students, right, with respect to their age. And so when I started here, I was, you know, sometimes the same age, or even today I'm same age as some of the students, and how do they feel of me being female, me being a woman of color, being the same age? I'm their professor and then the coordinator. Yeah. And what does that mean for them? And have they ever had to experience that? So in that respect, I think, you know, I could have made the easy decision in teaching in New York, but I felt, especially the courses that I teach with, I teach race, ethnicity, diversity, I also teach, you know, social work classes, I think sometimes they need to see the perspective from my lens. And it brings, I believe it brings a different perspective. Maybe I would like to think richness to it as opposed to just lecturing straight from a textbook. I could say, this is oppression. Look at what I've experienced. Sure. And I'm sure you have too. Do you recognize that you have been a victim of oppression or discrimination or what have you?
That's a very important point. I was speaking to some other faculty in another recording where we talked about, you know, women in academia mm-hmm. and some of the things, you know, that they face. And so, you know, you're, I guess you're sort of dealing with more than just that. You're
right.
also dealing with
so
the, with
the minority, right? The coins, you know, the Jonathan Coin.
Right. So, how do we improve that then? How do we improve the diversity of both students and faculty, as well as sort of, I guess, you know, change the climate or the culture of an institution?
Yeah. So, I think we've seen at Stockton that we will, we hire faculty of color, but it's that concern of retention. And so, how do we create an environment that truly understands the needs of faculty who have diversity, and linking them with mentors, but also having administration and staff really understand what does that mean? So, you know, it's interesting. I think we only have one assistant dean that is somebody of color. And I, you know, and some diversity issues like physical ability, you can't see. So we don't know. But visually what we're seeing, it's not there. And I can speak firsthand, like I said, the culture shock and so forth. And if it's not because of the informal mentoring that I received here, I don't think it would have been so productive and stayed or what have you.
Yeah.
You know, I can say that now that I have tenure. But, you know, because it was a shock in terms of how things go. And, you know, it, and as for students, sometimes, so it's interesting. I'm presenting at a conference on Thursday for the National Council of Black Studies, talking about mentoring, informal mentoring for African-American male students, and how this helps tremendously with retention. Because African-American males have the highest dropout rate of college, of attending college, right? Yeah. The retention rates are really, really low. And so the idea here is if we have some type of mentorship, studies have shown it helps with them feeling comfortable, because this is a new environment, new atmosphere, right? So it's a different language, academia, and so forth. And so how do we create this inviting experience where they feel like they fit? So it's an inclusive experience.
Yeah.
So that's the key of how, you know, and I know this is part of the IFD, of how... And I'm now, it's going to be the fellow for diversity. And so my goal is for staff, and I stress staff and administration because I think faculty, I think we're very vocal and we kind of, you know, believe that. I don't know if
we advocate
and we're big on that. So I want it to be that everyone is involved in the idea of having an inclusive campus.
Yeah.
So I think that's key. And you know, we've seen, I'm not trying to blame, but we've seen administration attend events and so forth, and that's really great and supportive. But I don't know if students feel that presence as much as they need to.
Yeah, I think that's always a struggle, right? You know, when you don't have a diverse faculty, then how do you mentor diverse students?
So what happens, and we've talked about this informally, myself, Donnie, Daryl, other people, faculty of color, where we have like a following of students of color that will, you know, take our class. So, you know, I teach social work, but I'll have students that will take every social work class that they can, but they're a crim major or business major, what have you, because they feel that connection or they feel comfortable. Yeah. Can you be my preceptor? And so, you know, I did a study here, a qualitative study, I want to say like 6 years ago, where again, I took African-American males and they talked about the experiences of when they approached certain professors, they felt they didn't get, they weren't as receptive as opposed to if it was a white student that was approaching them asking, you know, and it was about like, do you mind showing me this, you know, mathematical problem or could you have office hours and so forth? And it was not just one student. I, you know, interviewed 20. And this was a theme that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's how, hence the following happens.
I think you see it. You see it a lot, you know, in terms of students being reticent to approach certain professors just because, you know, I mean, and again, it's, and vice versa, right? You know, professors, I think, are sort of unsure what to do, right? Because this is somebody other than what they're used to.
Right.
Right, so you sort of face that, and then even in terms of hiring and, you know, the tenure process and all these kinds of things, you know, these, you know, you can't, it's going to come up.
Yeah.
Right. The question is, how honest are we?
Right.
Right. Yeah. In dealing with it.
And I make the joke like, I don't know if you're familiar with the movie Precious.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so it was about, you know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and so forth. And it's, you know, a movie we talk about in social work classes. And I say, you know, and the way that they portrayed the social worker. You know, it was Mariah Carey, one of the most glamorous females that exists, and they made her wear, like, a drab colors, gray, no makeup, wig, and so forth. And same thing how professors are portrayed in media. It's typically a white male with the tweed jacket with the elbow, you know, so I don't fit that. Right. And so it's interesting how, you know, so I used to do this experiment, you know, when I was fairly new or just students never took me, it was a freshman class, I would sit on the sideline and then I would stand and I would see everybody's face like, that's the professor?
Uh-huh.
And so it was interesting to say, well, you know, why are you shocked that I'm your professor?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the isms that exist. And it was like a great way to break the ice and say, listen,
absolutely.
I know they exist. Let's just talk about them, get them out there.
Now, do you use any other techniques in your classes to try to bring that out?
So so many times it's hard for students to understand racism because they haven't been a victim of or to understand white privilege. So I talk about other instances if they could think about where they felt excluded, whether it's because of their weight or how they looked or lack of physical ability or sports or what have you, and then how one time they were included. And so they could see the difference how they made, how they felt.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also exercise by Peggy McIntyre, which is great, where the students stand up. I say, okay, sit down if you, you know, attended public school, if you had parents or you knew somebody who was a drug addict or had to go to jail and so forth. And they saw the commonalities of, wow, this class is, you know, a bit diverse, but we all have these common presenting concerns in our life. And that helps to say we're more alike than different.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. But in my race class, I get very, you know, it's, I want to be real, you know, and I'm not teaching it this semester. I'm happy and I'm also upset because think about what's going on in the country today. I would be like this every, you know, and talking about immigration and our dear president, your president, as we say, not you per se.
But,
yeah. So I'm happy that I'm not teaching it, but I feel like I hope everyone's addressing it because, oh my goodness, you know, I've had students that have parents from Mexico or you know, different immigration status and so forth, and that's a big concern. And I can't imagine being a student. Midterms is coming up, and this is now, you know.
Anyway. We've done some things in the IFD to talk about, you know, talking about issues that are difficult right now. But again, we were talking more about the politics and not race. So, and I know that there are definitely professors that, have asked about, you know, how do I address these issues of race in my class, right? So I think you've talked about a couple of ways to do that, where you sort of break down that barrier,
yes,
right, of just not understanding the other.
Right.
And so these are good ideas.
Also, just one thing. I think I'm really big on helping students realize that race is a social construct.
Uh-huh.
And then it's crazy that we have 7 billion people in the world and we put them into 5 or 6, wow, categories.
Yeah, right.
And so when they think about it in that perspective, you know, and I explain that there's some families that, you know, one may identify one way and another way.
Yeah.
And it's visual. And it's interesting. I take myself, you know, I know this is on radio, but I'm brown skin. And I ask the students, well, if you had to put me in a category of white or black, which one would you put? And it's really interesting of where they put. And the students are, because a lot of times you can't tell visually where I'm from. And I use that to my advantage and say, well, why are you so curious? Do you want to fit me in a box? Because if I told you I'm from here, you'd say, oh, so you eat this. Oh, you do this or you do that. And I say, why is that so important for you to put somebody in a box?
Good question.
And so this is how I really address and
what do they usually answer?
It's interesting. Half the, some students will say white, and they say because of the texture of my hair. And they say your skin color, too. And some students will say black because of your skin color. So it's really interesting how the class, what I've done is
context,
it's like divided.
Right? It's where
really
you're coming from.
Yes. It's really interesting how they divide it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what other advice would you give to colleagues who are teaching content related to diversity? Is there anything that you'd say, you know, this is a good idea to start with?
Yeah, so like I said, thinking about race as a social construct and letting the students, I think it's hard for students to realize or recognize or admit to white privilege. And it's hard. I remember I had one student said, you know, I feel guilty being white. And so obviously I don't know how that feels. But to explore with them what that means and then how they have the power to, the fact that you can address or recognize institutional racism. So you, and I said the thing about this, I said, the wonderful thing about racism is that it's taught. And so it's a process that you can unlearn or work actively, right? I said, when kids go in the playground, and I use my daughter a lot, I said, kids don't care who they're playing with. It's if I pull my daughter or give my daughter a certain look. But they just care who has the cookies or who's on the monkey bars or what have you. It's what they learn. I said, you know, it's really interesting when people say, oh, my dog is racist. I said, your dog is not racist. It's the emotion that the dog is feeding off of you that will, they know to attack to this or that, so, you know, bark at or what have you. So I use those, I try to use, you know, day-to-day, everyday examples so people can relate, so our students can relate to it.
And it's a process, you know, I think it takes a long time. To break down some of those barriers, and it's usually experience that does that,
right?
I mean, it's, you know, it's when you actually, you know, I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood in Philadelphia, and I grew up hearing, you know, different things about different races that were definitely not true. And it was when I went to school downtown and got out of my neighborhood and realized, oh, you know, I'm around students of other races. And they're smarter than me.
Right.
So this idea that they're all dumb, that I've been told since I was a kid,
right,
doesn't apply anymore because I'm going, well, it's just not happening in my experience. And that makes me question, right? And then that's, you know, but that's not, it doesn't end there. You know, I mean, it's kind of ingrained in you over a very long time, and it's hard to break out of that. And, you know, and you still find yourself, you know, at times going, oh, well, you know, why did I react like that?
Yeah.
Well, it's because, you know, I'm still falling back on, I mean, I'm 50 years old, but I'm still falling back on stuff I did when I learned when I was 10, right? So it's, and I think that's what's hard is, you know, as students, you know, to be given those opportunities. But then when you have an institution where, you know, maybe you don't see as many students of different races, now you're not really getting the experience.
Yes.
So how do you get those?
Blatantly, when I see people of color, they're mostly cleaning. Right, they're a custodial staff, or they're in the lunch area, and so forth.
Right.
Nothing, obviously, that's nothing wrong with that, but the fact that this is solely what they see, and so who are their role models?
So without faculty, without administration that are of these other, you know, that look different than me, then I'm always going to assume that, you know, right, what I've been told or what I've learned is true.
Right. So I even do an exercise. I take like somebody that is considered good looking in Hollywood, so like a Brad Pitt who's white, and then I take someone who is not your traditional Eurocentric look, like a rapper or whomever, right? So like Future, I don't know if you know. I'll take those two and I say, well, why do you believe who's more handsome, and why do you believe this? And this is how you've been socialized with media to believe that this one person is better looking because they have the Eurocentric features. Or even when we see black actresses or whomever. In media, typically, they then still have those Eurocentric features that we find that's beautiful, what have not. I also ask them, I say, you know, without, you know, your parents coming to get at me, do you date outside your race? Yeah. And why or why not? Why are you voting the way you do? Is it that you've been told this way? Or do you understand, you know, what love is? And are you opening yourself to these experiences? I tell them, this is college. This is where you should live and learn. You know, just don't stick with your mix of friends. But do you have friends of diversity, not only with race, but ability or religion or, you know, ideological differences or what have you, to really expose yourself to say, I think this way. I've been exposed to X amount, and I think this way because I've made a conscious decision to think this or believe this. And as soon as you see the wheels turning, you're like, whoa, I never thought I'd only date, you know. And I say, they break it down. I say, it's not that you're Italian, you're dating somebody who's Irish, even broader your perspective. So, because in our mind, it's, you know, still Caucasian or white. Because now there's a big thing with using the word Caucasian. I don't know if you read about the right.
Really?
So, yeah, there's like this thing going on in social work that it's fairly new. Like, what does Caucasian mean? Is a proper term to continue to use? So, I have to know. What does it mean that if you're dating somebody white, but, you know, or somebody outside your race specifically, not ethnicity? So we talk about, well, I mean, I get really real in my classes because I think then students listen as opposed to just straight lecturing, like, this is what happened, 300 years of this, or does, you know, slavery or not, you know, that's important as well, but they want to connect it to their day-to-day, what's going on, to make it relevant,
and meaningful.
I make the joke. I said, listen, if I'm looking for certain students, I know where to find you in the cafeteria. You're downstairs in the specific booth. Why is that?
Right.
I said, but I can't blame you guys because you'll see faculty members also grouping
the same thing,
either by discipline or by race or gender. Mm-hmm. So we do the same thing as well.
Yeah.
And then they kind of now are more open with their eyes when they see.
Okay. Now, let's say a faculty member was looking to look into this more and start kind of exploring the topic for themselves. Where would you start them at?
Peggy McIntyre is amazing, and she has a lot of work that's about talking about diversity. Mm-hmm. There's abundance of research that looks about teaching about diversity, especially if you're not of diverse population, and how do you address, topics that can be taboo. Like, typically you'll talk about it within your group, but if it's between groups, how do you feel about that? I have the reverse of me being a woman of color talking to majority white students, and how do they feel and how do I address that? But I see that as an advantage. I don't see that as a disadvantage. Yeah. The only time I feel a little is when we talk about white privilege, because I want them to understand it's not me stating this. It's the advantages of the United States and history.
Yeah.
So that's the little tricky part. I think it's different coming from a white professor as opposed to coming from me. But that they could look at my research. I do, and there's a lot of faculty members here that publish about race and teaching at a predominantly white institution. And what does that mean when you're talking about diversity? It's different. It's easier to talk about race in New York for me.
Right,
because we see it, we feel it. There's demonstrations going on right in front of the universities.
Yes.
Right? So it's like in our face. We see the police officers. We'll see. It's a little bit hits home a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, you know, racism exists everywhere. It's just that it's, I think, more out there in our face.
Yeah, right.
And there's more political action. Like, you know, Al Sharpton, you'll see him in the train next to you. It's a little bit different.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for spending time with me today and talking about this topic. If people want to reach you, is there a way to get a hold of you?
You could just feel free to email me, allison.sinanen@stockton.edu.
Allison, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Right. Appreciate it.
Talking Stock is a podcast produced by me, Doug Harvey, for the Institute for Faculty Development at Stockton University. Visit our website, www.stockton.edu/IFD, where you can find a link to show notes and transcripts for every episode. The music for Talking Stock is provided by the Organic Music Library, www.organicmusiclibrary.com. Thank you for listening.